We are here to frighten and disturb. Listen at your own discretion.
You must be either mad or insane to seek out this godforsaken place. But since you're here, I guess I can show you the Nest of Horrors. Don't fall.
This story is part 6 of The Body Farm, written by Brian Martinez, and narrated by Erosion Rob, Britton Maston, Easton Lyons, and Johnny Beasley.
I don't know who I can believe anymore, if anyone at all. My days have become a surreal series of events, and I find myself questioning everything that happens within them. Even my own thoughts. After I checked myself out of the hospital, I caught the cab to my place. Good old apartment 403. Proceeded to take the longest shower of my life. It was probably the greatest feeling I've ever known, with a close second going to the nap that I took directly after. I passed out for a long time. The kind of deep, heavy sleep that feels like it will last the rest of your life. The only reason I woke up was because someone rang my doorbell. It turned out to be Detective Andrews. He saw by my face that I'd been sleeping and apologized for not being able to call before he came over. I still have to remember to buy a new phone when I get a chance. We took the short drive to the shore in the detective's car without saying much. I double-checked that we wouldn't be going to the island alone, and he assured me several of the detectives would be meeting us on the pier. First, he said he wanted to bring me to the boat launch, in case it jogged my memory. I also suspected it was to see how the boat owner reacted to my presence, but we were both in for a surprise when we stepped inside the small launch office. The guy behind the counter was young, not what I described in my writings at all. He turned out to be the launch's new owner. He explained to us that the old owner, Willis, had sold it to him for dirt cheap, which is how it managed to change hands so quickly. He had no information about Willis's whereabouts, but he did know that the old man had sold the business after the boat captain, who was apparently his brother, had urged him to. He said they'd seem pretty nervous about something. Maybe it was something they saw, I told Andrews. He nodded, but didn't say anything. Before we left, I asked if Willis had left anything behind. A cell phone, maybe. But the young guy said he hadn't found anything. We got back in the detective's car and drove a few minutes to a different pier, where two more detectives met us by a boat in one of the docks. One was blonde and named Detective Cooper. The other had red hair and a mustache and was called Detective Bennett. They didn't seem familiar to me at all, which offered me a weird kind of relief. I asked to see their badges, which they showed me, and they seemed amused when I studied them closely.
My New Year's resolution is to be less trusting, I offered.
They didn't laugh. When I asked where the rest of the cops were, they explained that they were already out on the island. We all got in the boat and headed over. Cooper was at the wheel. The weather was nice. One of those first days of spring that makes the winter feel like a bad dream. But at the back of my mind, nagging me, was a voice of dread. I couldn't believe I was going back to that damn island. As much as I bitch and complain about it, whenever I'm given the chance to return to Twain Island, I always take it. Maybe something about it calls to me. I don't know. Meanwhile, the detectives were having quiet conversations without me, just under the sound of the motor and the slapping of the boat against the ocean, and when I leaned in closer, they stopped talking. As we came close to the island, I felt a ball form in my stomach and a sharp pain in my temples. I noticed there weren't any boats tied to the dock.
Calm down.
Andrews told me.
They'll be here.
You promised me a buttload of cops, I said.
The police have cases other than yours. Now relax. The three of us are more than capable of keeping you safe.
I argued with him a bit more, but in the end, there was nothing to talk about. We were already at the island, and it was too late to turn around. I told them I decided to stay on the boat until they got back. Detective Cooper took the keys with him as he got out of the boat. Bennett pointed out that I'd be alone if I stayed behind. I didn't like his tone. Like an adult threatening a kid with a boogeyman. Andrews was the most understanding. He said he understood my hesitation, and normally they wouldn't expect a victim to return to the scene of an incident. But, as it stood, I was both the only witness and the only evidence they had. Without my help, whatever had happened on that island would stay a mystery for good. And that meant whoever had attacked me would go free while I lived in fear. He had a good point. The first stop we made was to the guard's office. As we came up the small hill and I saw the state of the building, I felt immediate validation. The door had clearly been smashed in. Half of it dangling on its frame, and the other half spread in shards across the floor. The detective stepped inside first. After a second of hesitation, I followed. There was a strong smell in the air that I couldn't place. The scene was exactly how I described it. The desk and table on their sides where they'd been used to barricade the door. But the computer I'd used to type all those entries was missing, along with the broken two-way radio in the other room. When I asked the detectives if they'd been removed as evidence, they said neither of those items had been found.
Then, I guess someone did a bit of a cleanup before the cops arrived, I said.
That was when I realized what the smell was. Bleach.
Someone did a thorough job of scrubbing the island,
Detective Bennett said. He said whoever it was had missed a few drops of blood, and he pointed to the spot where they'd been found, high up on the far wall. It had to have been a brutal attack for any amount of blood to make it that far. I asked if the blood had been tested, to see who it belonged to, and he said that they were still waiting for lab results.
I have a feeling it's mine, I said.
At least some of it,
he replied. I noticed him exchange an uncomfortable glance with the other men, like he'd said too much. And suddenly, it hit me. Was I a suspect? From their perspective, I was the guy who'd been found bloody and high, with stories of strange lights and disappearing corpses. A single, white male who was recently unemployed. My God, I fit the bill. But did they really think I'd go back there if I was responsible for what happened? Then again, the criminal supposedly always returns to the scene of the crime. If the guard's office was cleaned out, the main research facility made it look like Exhibit A in comparison. Every box, every machine, every instrument had disappeared from the building, neatly packed up and taken away in the time since I'd been there. My memories from the island were still spotty at best, but I had distinct images in my mind of what those places had looked and felt like, and what I was seeing didn't match up. Where before it had been an active place of research, what we stood in now was a shell, a hollow building on a silent island. Somehow, it had become even eerier without the boxes full of dead bones and skulls. Lonelier, maybe. From there, we began a walk around the island. The detectives let me take the lead, not walking in front, mind you, just pointing the direction that we should go. And I did my best to guess and feel my way from body site to body site. At each one, we found only the telltale patches of flattened, dead grass, which marked where a body had been laid out. A few of them reminded me of snow angels. Not even the wire cages which had held most of the bodies were left behind. I was more and more amazed by the thoroughness of the cleanup job. Eventually, I led the detectives to where the entrance of the cave should have been, but not being low tide, it wasn't visible down below. With their help, I scoured the nearby area for any signs of a second entrance, which I was still sure had to be there. But after close to an hour, we turned up nothing to speak of but a few rusted batteries and an empty bottle of booze.
There's nothing here,
Detective Bennett said, sounding annoyed. Cooper and Andrews looked at me, waiting for me to say something. I shrugged and told them to come back during low tide. Without another word, they turned and started heading back towards the boat. As I trailed the men back through the forest, the headache which had settled into my temples as we approached the island, and had been there in the background since, expanded through the back of my skull until it became a full-on migraine. As someone not prone to migraines, it was an intense feeling. The sunlight and the sound of the ocean became unbearable. Even smells seemed to grow stronger, which on that island was not a good thing. My eyes watered and felt like they wanted to burst out of their sockets. I stopped walking, trying to push the pain back, but the detectives ahead were totally oblivious. As I stood there, holding my nauseous stomach, I saw someone move between the trees. Plain as day, it was a human figure, in the forest, in the distance. I shouted out to the detectives, but from the angle they couldn't see him. I was fed up with the whole situation. I don't care how crazy it sounds, but I ran full speed into the forest, chasing the man I'd seen in the distance. The detectives followed after me as I weaved between the trees, yelling for the stranger to stop. Only once I caught another glimpse of him, but then he was gone, disappeared just past the grouping of trees. No matter how fast I ran, I couldn't catch him again. And eventually, the detectives shouted for me to stop. They looked for footprints in the dirt, but only found mine. Not one of them had seen him, and I couldn't tell if they believed me or were just humoring me. The description I gave them of the man was vague, and I decided to keep it that way. In the boat again, heading back to shore, I caught a glimpse of a birthmark on Detective Andrews' neck, just behind his ear. It sounds strange, but the sight of it sent the biggest sense of déjà vu up my spine, and I knew in that moment that I hadn't recognized him from the hospital, that I had to have met him sometime before that.
So, what happened to the other officers? I asked.
The ones who were supposed to meet us out here?
Cooper shouted over the noise of the motor.
We had to get you out to the island somehow.
After we got to shore, Cooper and Bennett went their own way, and Andrews dropped me off back at my apartment. Before he could pull away, I leaned back in and asked which precinct he and the other detectives worked for.
31st,
he said. I was quiet a second.
You're full of shit, aren't you?
Without responding, he put the car into drive and pulled away. I should have written down his plate number, but I didn't think of it until it was too late. When I got inside, I looked up the 31st precinct and called them up using my neighbor's phone. Not surprisingly, no one by those names works for the police. The more I think about it, the more I recognize the stranger I saw out on the island. I'd gotten a better look at him than I let on, but I wasn't about to tell the detectives that unless I wanted to spend some time in a mental ward. The man in the forest. It was me.
Consider reviewing us on iTunes and Stitcher, and following us on social media at Nest of Horrors. Thank you for listening.